Hello and welcome to Watch What Crappens, a podcast about all that crap on Bravo that we just love to talk about. I'm Ben Mandelker. Normally, Ronnie Karam would be here, but he is out today. So we have just an exquisite fill-in today. The one and only comedian extraordinaire, writer, comedian, very funny person, Ray Sani is back. Hi, Ray. How are you?
Ben, thank you for having me. It's been such a while. How have you been?
I know it has been a while. I've been really great. How's everything going in New York City?
It's hot. So for your Patreon members, I am glistening. This is New York City all on me. Okay, it's like a heat wave. It's like 99 degrees. Taylor Swift is like clogging up Madison Square Garden. It's a weird time in New York right now.
People are on top of the Empire State Building. It's just
I love that. I was like, was that like an attempt to like upstage Taylor? Because her ass like shut down. Like she pulled a Donald Trump from the Knicks game, basically. But she was even more crazy because she's holding up that area around Madison Square Garden for 2 days, like from today until like Saturday or Sunday, which is absurd. So I'm glad everyone's talking about the Empire State Building and not her right now.
It's like, I think I almost would rather talk about the Great American State Fair at this point, which, by the way, I think is actually what's happening at Madison Square Garden. So speaking of basics, today we're talking about the Valley. Everyone should go, by the way, before we do anything else, everyone must follow Ray on social media. Ray, tell everyone where they can find you, because I want to say that you will never get funnier, more incisive, more truth-telling takes than Ray when she's on social media, or even when you're not on social media. But like, you are so, I love reading your hot takes, even when I don't even like align with them. I just love that you're like, this is how I feel. So tell everyone where they can find you.
Nice, Ben. That's so nice, because I've been feeling lonely. Summer House had me lonely. Okay. You can find me on at RaySani87 on Threads. That's mostly where I talk. I don't go on Twitter anymore. I'm on Instagram at RaySani87 as well.
Yeah, you are really one of the funniest people. And I have to say, I think it was because of you that I started to change my mind on Portia all those years ago. You came onto this show and you were like, I am not a fan of Portia. And I was like, what are you talking about? Portia's great. And I mean, I like love Portia, but I feel like I'm much more critical of her because of you. Because I feel like you kind of like opened my eyes to some of like the Portia bullshit, you know, on Atlanta.
Because I liked her more all of a sudden than I have in a while. Because I think like with Portia, she's starting to, like, she can't hide it. That, this is so irrelevant to what we're talking about, but that scene with her and Dennis at the end of the episode a couple weeks back, I was like, look at Portia, she can't control the narrative anymore. Dennis came in and just like obliterated like what she wanted to do in that scene. And as long as I get to see that part of her, then I'll take the bullshit too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm not even going to go down that path because we're going to get derailed, because today our mission is to talk about the Valley. Ray, you've been watching this season so far?
I had watched the first like three episodes, and I don't know, I think I just got swept up in Summer House and I just like didn't care about the Valley. And then you hit me up and I like binged maybe like 10 episodes. And I was like, I am enjoying this. I'm actually enjoying this. I know the word around town is that this show sucks. And like, I can understand the complaints, but I'm not as like upset with the show that we're getting as everyone else. But I had a great time.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think the season's actually really good. It's not, you know, you don't have a big bad in the same way as Jax, although Danny has emerged as one. But I think it's kind of just showing like the warts of suburban decay, you know, and like just like living in like just you're past your prime. Now you've got your kids and like the happily ever after that you were hoping for is just like not there. You don't have the same body that you used to have. You're not as happy as you used to be. The party days are over, but you're clinging on. And like that.
Hitting the sign when you need to sit down.
It all sounds like kind of depressing, but I find it like fascinating because it's kind of real, you know?
I also find it very fascinating. And for me, this like contrast within the city, like, is really like enhancing my experience of both shows, because I feel like I lived in Los Angeles for only like 3 years, and a year and a half of that was the pandemic. So I didn't really live in Los Angeles. Like, you know, I never got to know the city, but I also know that New York is such a unique, specific place to live and a specific place to age. Like, I think both New York and LA have this like Peter Pan thing going on where you can be perma-adolescent just because of like the lifestyle the city affords you, or just the entertainment business in general. But the way they do Peter Pan syndrome is so different. Like, Kyle is very immature, but his immaturity looks so different from Jesse Lally's, you know? And I think that that's like a product of the cities that they're in.
I 100% agree. And I feel that way so much, like, because the people on in the city are having like their, like you said, what did you say, like permanent adolescence or something, but it's has like a different vibe. It's like a professional, they're still like professionals, and they're in this city where they're going to like a kind of chic Indian restaurant for this like wedding thing. And they're all dressed in these like really nice tuxes and things like that. But they are all kind of still locked in a certain place in their life. But then like on the Valley, they're just kind of in this malaise of, you know, I don't even know what half the people do on the show. They just sort of are there.
So crazy, because like I like ADHD meds. So apologies if I get like too literary. But there's an element of like, they're literally over the hill in the Valley. Like, that is crazy. And like, you're seeing that. And like, is like the epitome of such a thing. You know what I mean? And it's like, fascinating to watch. And like, what's so interesting, and I'm still trying to figure out Danny and Nia, because I can't finger them, but like, ew, no finger, you know what I mean. Like, so the appeal to me about In the City is that New York City is a character on the show, and ostensibly everybody else is doing something other than just being a reality star. I mean, like Lindsay and Kyle, just reality stars, but they still, you know, sell me the idea that they're doing something other than being on TV, being themselves professionally. And so like, there is an enthusiasm about the next chapter that I feel like they all are having. You know, these guys want to get married. Andrea wants a baby. Like, they're thrilled. Like, Lindsay wants to be a mom on the go, even as she still wants the home life. Whereas like, it feels like everybody on the Valley is like doing what they're doing because like what they wanted to do is a far gone like conclusion, or it's like a possibility that doesn't exist anymore. Kristen Doty is not going to be a model. So here she is being a very distraught postpartum mom, you know?
I often feel that way as well. I often feel like the cast on the Valley, like their dreams have kind of escaped them in some weird way. Like, maybe Zach's dreams are still alive, although I don't know really what Zach's dreams are. I'm not sure. Maybe it's to get back that monster fridge. But yeah, it's, I do think the Valley is really good. And so let's like dive right back into it. So we're this is gonna be what is it? It's episode 14, Hips Don't Lie, season 3. So I know it's like an affront to Shakira, but and Wyclef too. Let's just say it.
I'm offended too. Danny's hips do lie. He be lying. He just be lying all the time.
His hips literally lie. He's acting like, let's not act like this is Channing Tatum incarnate here. All he did was like sort of get down low on his knees.
Mike is crazy. Like, what are we talking about here?
Okay, hi everyone. We had some audio issues, in case you couldn't tell. And so we've adjusted the setup. And now hopefully there won't be any more clipping or anything. If you hear like the echo of my voice by accident, I apologize ahead of time. But, you know, this is just, it's a hot New York City day and Taylor Swift has taken over Manhattan. So there's, you know, this is like Mercury in retrograde.
Yeah.
It's 5, you know. Mm-hmm. So I don't even remember where we were. We were just about to start the recap. I do, of course, why start a recap when I can ask more questions? Before we start the recap, because we're starting in the scene with everyone at this restaurant, I have to ask you, where do you stand on like the lightning rod of the season, like, or of the Valley in general? Where do you stand on Janet?
You know, it's so interesting because I've been thinking about this a lot. I see that the internet hates her, and I don't. I mean, I don't think she's interesting enough to hate as much as everyone does, you know?
Yeah.
I think, so I remember seeing that, like, Ariana said she's, like, a wonderful person. Lala seems to really like her, and this is going to shock you, but my favorite character on this show is Michelle, and Michelle is really, like, close with Janet too. So I'm assuming that there are good qualities in her. I love her husband. He is fine as fuck. Did you know he's
fine, right? I didn't know till midway through last season, but he's like, I honestly think he's like one of the hottest guys on Bravo, if not the hottest guy, right?
And he's just, but the thing is, you don't notice it because he's so classy and like dorky and nerdy and stuff. But it was like, I was like, oh, he broke his body doing basketball. I'm in love with this man.
I noticed it from this first episode of the entire series.
I noticed that he was like cute, but I didn't know that I wanted to suck his dick as much as Janet talks about doing it. So like, so I was like, whoa, so if Jason loves her like he does, and he's not like a henpecked husband. He like rides for his wife. I'm like, there must be some good quality about her. I think what I've concluded is that she's just terrible television, and she's too emotional to move strategically on a show that requires strategy when you're in a group of veterans. So it's like I remember when she, in the first couple of episodes, like she was having these one-on-one chats and she like had no idea how to approach these conversations. I'm like, this is your third season on the show. You mean to tell me you didn't anticipate production or production by way of Lala getting you to talk to these people?
By way of Lala.
And like getting you to talk to these people, and you didn't plan out what you were going to say. You just showed up to Nia and was like, if you got something to say, say it to me. I'm like, girl, like even if I think that you're not entirely wrong, like you should have just had strategy. And she's so bad at the strategy part. So she doesn't know how to have an on-camera fight. And then she either shuts down or she says some really expensive shit that just like shuts down conversation or like makes her too loathsome to talk to. And she's not charming enough otherwise to make me go, this is worth it. So like, she was missing for like 3 episodes at the beginning of the season, and I didn't give a fuck. And that's a bad look for her. And like, this show is very weird, I noticed. I think maybe with the benefit of like binging so many episodes together, I saw it. But like, I can't tell the group dynamics. And I don't know if that's like a problem with the storytelling on the part of production, or these people are like hiding their real relationships and stuff. Cause like, it wasn't until like 2 episodes ago where I figured out where the friendships actually are. Cause I'm like, why does Jasmine keep saying Zach is her best friend? That ain't true. And then here we have Brittany and Jasmine saying that Nia and Kristen ain't actually that close. And I'm sitting here like, who's friends with whom? Because you would not be able to tell that Janet had good friends in the group if you were just watching the show. But it's clear that she's real tight with Michelle. She's real tight with Brittany. With Lala, and she has some like decent, like Zach keeps trying to, you know, play the TV game with her, but he likes her too. So I'm just sitting here being like, what is, like, I can't tell whose fault that is. Is it them for not knowing how to assist production in telling their stories, or is it just like production's not finding the proper through
line? I think that's production. That's such an interesting thing. I never even thought about that with this show, because it was sort of surprising when all of a sudden they started saying like, well, Brittany, you've never really liked Nia. And I was like, really? I never realized.
I didn't notice.
And I'm sure if you go back, there's like breadcrumbs like, oh yeah. Like it's, you know, there was an issue in Santa Barbara where she was mad at Nia for covering for Danny when Danny was napping. But like, you're right. Like you don't really know where you stand with these people necessarily. There's not like necessarily like lines in the sand. But like this trip has kind of highlighted that there have been kind of like two factions. There is like the pro Janet faction, and we're getting more and more the side that's more like the Danny and Nia side, where you've got Kristen and you've got Jesse Lolly and you've got
Luke, I don't know who else. And
Luke, you know. But that's a really interesting point. And I really liked what you had to say about Janet. I think you're totally spot on. I never understood really last year why people seemed to hate Janet as much as like Jax, if not more. Mm-hmm. I was like, I get
it. No misogyny. Come on, you know the answer to that. Oh, that's misogyny.
Of course. But like I did feel like she was indelicate about, you know, the sexual assault.
Indelicate is the perfect word. Indelicate is the perfect word for that. Because it doesn't castigate her, right? It doesn't make her the bad guy. She's just indelicate. Like, she didn't handle it properly, but she wasn't wrong for wanting to handle it, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember feeling like when they were on that boat and she was like, well, sexual assault, I remember thinking to myself, like, the reason why it's like she's not winning this argument is A, because she sort of inserted, it was a different discussion that was happening on that boat, and then she brought it in, and then it felt like she was pulling that out as almost like a card.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, Janet just sort of has inherent, like, Karen energy. And so when she, when she, like, comes at you with, like, here's my issue with you, her tone and her presentation always has, like, a vibe of Karenism.
Yes.
That makes everything she says almost seem discredited in a weird way. Like, she's going to call the manager on you. But like, if you get past that, it's like, you know, she wasn't, I actually was like last season. I mean, I like to think that I articulated that I was like, I kind of saw her POV last season. I don't remember. Like, I'm sure people listening be like, man, you never said that. You were bandwagoning. But I always thought, like, when she was like, yeah, being in the pantry with Danny.
That shit is weird.
And even when Danny then was like, no, I went in there because I wanted to get a drink and it was behind the door, so I had to close the door. I remember, like, being like, okay, well, maybe he has a point. But
no, he does not have a point. He does
it's
not
fucking
have a
weird.
Point.
It's no, he's weird.
He's fucking weird. And here's the thing, and I'm not going to victim blame Jasmine, but she let the story get away from her as well. See, I find Jasmine to be one of the more frustrating people on this cast. Like, maybe because, unfortunately, because I don't know her from prior to this show, I have expectations for her. Like, I know Kristen Duty's terrible. I know everybody else is terrible. But Jasmine seems like, I won't say level-headed, because she's certainly not that, but she seems like a decently put together, well-raised person, right? So I keep like expecting her to be emotionally intelligent enough to like handle some of these things, and she's clearly not. She's very stunted emotionally. I'm finding she argues very childishly. But so to me, it sounds like Danny groped her fiance when he was drunk. And she's not finished being mad about it, but she wants to be cool with the group. So she's pretending she's done being mad about it. And she's not. So it seeps out. And then it got out last time. And Janet hijacked it, inadvertently, maybe. I don't know. Hijacked Jasmine's story. So Jasmine, to fit in with the group, had to back off of Janet a little bit. And so now, a year later, foolishly, she's realizing that everybody dismissed her black gay feelings about that. And now we're all fixated on Janet and Danny when me and my fiance's feelings are still hurt. And I'm salty doubly because y'all are all baby in this motherfucker and you obsessed with Janet. And now I gotta back off of Janet because y'all making it weird for me. It's like, what the fuck is going on here? So like, Janet was indelicate and she also usurped the victim story because the preview next week looks like she's going to cry about her own sexual assault. And I'm like, girl, Danny didn't happen to you. It happened to Jasmine. And I think Melissa is her fiance's name. I don't
know. Melissa, yeah.
So like, it's all weird. Janet, the Karen energy, I hear you totally. Cause like, I'm like, is this bitch allergic to an apology? Like, what is she doing? Like there's just a tone. And like, I'm a tone person. Like, you can't talk to me like that. Like, who are you talking to? So even when Nia's wrong, the way Janet be talking, it's like, girl, like, I think at one point at the table, she's like, and that's why you're in debt, $500,000 in debt to Jesse. I'm like, who was fucking talking about that? Why are you doing that? Like, usually on a show on like reality TV, I have a character that's like, they got a point, but they be arguing wrong and I still ride for them. But Janet has a point, she's arguing wrong, but she's not even likable enough for me to be like, damn, girl, I feel you. But she's not.
Yeah.
You're right. Indelicate is like the perfect word for her. The thing is, like, because she's so unlike, and it shouldn't matter, right? Because like morals are morals, but because we're making a TV show, you got to factor in likability as well.
It's time for a commercial. It's time for a Crappens commercial.
Sorry, I just like went on a rant.
No, I'm enjoying your insight on this. I think it's great.
Thank you. So I noticed, and I think this is the benefit of a binge as opposed to you watching week to week. I noticed that like around episode 6 or 5, right? All of a sudden, then they're pretending that Danny's drinking is not the problem, but how he acts when he drinks is a problem. Did you notice that shift? And it's like a big one, and it makes for a hard argument to have with Danny, because now Danny doesn't have to admit he has a drinking problem. Now he gets to point out how everybody acts funny when they're drunk. But the problem isn't that people act up when they're drunk. The problem is that you're an alcoholic and you turn into a monster. You specifically cannot handle alcohol. Right. You specifically. They might have bad, shitty, drunk nights, but you are sneaking White Claws in gyms of houses that you don't live in, my dude. Like, you got an issue. You know what I mean?
Yes. Like, that is the issue.
It's like, I mean, Jesse Lally has never lied about being drunk on camera, as far as we know. The fact that you have to lie about drinking on camera, and then you, and it doesn't even occur to you to just not drink, right? Like,
it does occur to him, and when it does occur to him, he gets really grumpy about it. Oh, he gets really surly, and then he'll remind everyone, look at me, I'm not drinking anything. But I agree. We're going to start this recap now.
What I will say is
it's an interesting nuance, because Ron and I have had a lot of conversations about, like, it's not so much that he drinks, it's like his behavior when he drinks is awful. So we have been a little bit more on the side of like, it's the behavior more than the act. But the truth is,
he's an alcoholic.
It's really not as black and white. It's not as black and white as that. Like, he doesn't, like, his relationship with alcohol is messy. Yeah. So like, it's not as clean as like, oh, drink as much as you want. But I think everyone's saying like, don't hide your booze. If you're going to drink, drink. But like, also acknowledge
that. The wrong argument, though, because their issue isn't whether or not he drinks or whether or not he's like that. That felt like to me, production. Danny and Nia went to production and said, "These people are calling me an alcoholic on TV, and I'm not with it." And then Lala, being the production microphone, she started to alter her argument. And then all of a sudden, you get Brittany and Jasmine all being like, "Oh my God! Like, I don't care. Drink all you want. Drink all you want." 2 episodes ago, you didn't want him to drink. Like, so what are we doing here? You know.
Well, I think it's a way to insulate themselves from having the finger pointed back. Be like, "What about you?" Because everyone on this show gets shit faced, and everyone has sort of pops off and gets crazy. So so they know that the first thing that Danny would say is, "Well, you get drunk, and Zach gets drunk," and it happens last week with Kristen saying it. That's actually literally how we enter this episode. But by sort of saying, "Okay, that point is off the table. We're not going to discuss that point. We're just going to discuss your behavior." But I've always said, I'm like, Danny, you're like 48 years old, an aging character actor who appeared on the OC once, and now you like still don't know how to drink. Like, you're the person showing up at wine tasting. You showed up like late, so you have to like catch up. Like, are we 21? Why do we have to catch up? We're not doing that anymore. Okay, you've got 10 million children. You live in Santa Clarita. There's nothing to catch up to at this point. So like, what, him even doing that last season, I was like, oh, you don't know how to drink. So he doesn't know how to drink. He drinks too much too fast, and he outpaces everyone else. And when people outpace people when you're drinking, like, that's like an uncomfortable feeling for everyone else. Every single time, anyone here who's listening who has been in a social setting where someone is drinking faster than the rest of the table, we all know, we all give each other looks, we all are watching them, because you're like, are we going to have to take care of this person? What are they going to do? How are they going to act? And then no one can have fun in the same way. And that's what Danny does, in my opinion.
And it's not just that he's outpacing them. It's also like, and this is just generally what happens with people who are problematic drinkers. There are people who, when they get drunk, they become heightened versions of themselves. There are people who get mean when they're drunk. And mm-hmm. when you're the kind of person who instantly slips into rage once you've hit a certain point of like booze intake, you're a problematic drinker. And Danny doesn't, I've never watched an episode of this show and seen Danny drunk and been like, ah, he looks like he'd be fun to be around. Like yeah. he's always, and it's not just like loud rage, it's often like quiet seething rage. And that to me is the sign of a problematic drinker. And like Jesse Lolly, like when Nia makes the comparison between Jesse Lolly, like pretending to give Jason head on a party bus, that's not the same kind of too drunk as like rage Danny shitting on his wife, refusing to move his feet on the, you know what I mean? And like mm-hmm. everybody's like eliding and conflating things that are just like, they're not the same. And I know y'all know what problematic drinking looks like. I mean,
we all know, but I love your use of eliding. I mean, come on. But yeah, and I, you know what? Don't you also feel like if Danny had a track record of being a really, really fun drunk, this may sound kind of problematic, but don't you feel like if he had a track record of being like a super fun drunk, that like if he put his hand on like Melissa's thigh and said, bring daddy a drink, don't you think it would have landed differently? I know that sounds really bad because it's like, personal space, violation of personal space, whatever. But like when someone's a problematic drinker and they invade your personal space like that, it feels ickier than when you have if you have a relationship where you're saying that kind of stuff to each other all the time and you get drunk and you say those things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And like, I don't get the sense that anybody besides Jesse and Nia like Danny sober. So if I don't even like you sober and you no fun when you drunk, like you don't get to touch my girl's ass. Like, what are we doing here? You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, exactly. Okay, so let's dive into the listeners are like, are you guys going to start the recap? But, you know, like this stuff has to be discussed at all times. This is why I think the Valley is good, because it's like we are like every episode we are debating this stuff because it makes you like. It gives you a reaction. I think the worst reality shows are the ones where you have no reaction to them whatsoever. You just watch it and then you move on with your life. And this one, we are all fired up and we might be angry. We might say it's dark, but at least we're like, we're feeling something. So where we're picking up is we're still at that lunch where basically, you know, Janet and Nia are, and Kristen are having, and Jesse and Michelle are all there. And Kristen's like, well, why don't you like, what about like Brittany and Zach and Jasmine? What about their drinking? And then of course, Janet right away just starts texting them and is like, you guys have no idea. Kristen just said you guys are like murdering people and you're problematic and you should be canceled by America.
See, this is why I'm like, this bitch needs to be better TV, because how amazing would it be if she was like, and I just told them what you said at the table, yep. instead of like quietly storm and then like telling them later, like if she sat there like a boss bitch and was like, see how you talking about your friends, see this is why I don't fuck with y'all at this table, something like that. She don't have to say like me, she's not from Brooklyn, but I mean like if she
said it like you, that would have been very funny.
It'd be very la la of her if she said it like
me. Yeah, it would be.
but she's like in like she's WhatsApping people in Mexico like.
Well, because she is still trying to be on best behavior. I think she's afraid to pop off on people. And actually, like, my favorite moment of hers of the whole season was when Luke was, like, lecturing her at that awful James Bond party. And then finally, Janet just said, I don't have to know fucking Charles Manson to know that he's a psychopath. And I was like, I laughed so hard. I was like, this is the persona I want Janet to lean into, to be like, you know what? Fuck all of you people, okay? I'm sick of it.
And also, you know me, I love a villainess. So I'm just kind of like, why? The audience already hates you, girl. Just do you. Like, she's still trying to, like, hedge and, like, trying to see if she can get people on her side. Girl, they don't like you. You two seasons in. It took people. I was team Katie Maloney from season one. Nobody liked my girl until season 14 or some shit like this. So just be yourself. You know what I mean? Like you can't convince people that you're likable. You just got to be likable. And part of being likable is being yourself, you know?
Well, maybe she's afraid of people not wanting to film with her, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
But she's got Brittany, she's got Michelle, she's got Lala, she's got people.
Yeah.
So she's sitting there crying, and Nia's like, oh, she's crying from self-induced things. Like, she put herself in this position. And Jesse's like, well, you can hear the heart truth and be like, I fucked up, I'm sorry. Which is very rich coming from Jesse, who I feel like does not like...
Has never apologized authentically in his life, has he? No.
No, no. So Janet's outside. She's speaking to Jason on the phone, hot Jason. And she's just saying how this has brought up so many like feelings she doesn't want to talk about. And she's like crying. And, you know, she's obviously she has stuff in her past that she's triggered by. But then, of course, who do you want to hear? Who do you want to come console you in these moments? None other than Tom Schwartz, who I still don't understand why he is on this show this season. And he comes over just like, oh, hey, Janet. Oh, God. Do you have anxiety? I mean, she's sitting here crying, crying on a cobblestone street in the middle of Mexico. And he's like, do you have anxiety? Like, get the fuck out of here.
I like the attempt. I like the attempt. I like that he didn't let her cry herself. Because, you know, I love Michelle, but what's disappointing me about her is that she also is not brave enough to just be like, I fuck with Janet, so leave her alone. And so she's like, she's not, you know, she's not taking the best friend step forward that she needs to. So I appreciate that somebody, Tom, went out there and was, Tom knows how to make a TV show. He'd been around for long enough. You know what I mean? And he's like, okay, guys, we can't leave the girl outside crying by herself. She's the source of conflict. Let's just make her comfortable enough to be in the room, you know?
He's like, we can pour a drink on her head, but we can't leave her alone.
Yeah, we can cheat on her, but...
do all those things. I mean, I do think that Michelle has become more and more strident in her defense of Janet. She started to actually say more specifically, like, she's become more full voice over the course of even just this episode about, like, what Janet is, like, bothered by and how she's feeling and her feelings towards Danny. I mean, she literally says in just a few moments, she's like, everyone has an issue with Danny, you know? And, like, she's kind of like, yeah, Danny sucks, you know?
Yeah. So that's another thing I didn't notice. Weren't they positioning Michelle and Nia as best friends the first season, at the very least, the first season, right? So I'm like, are Michelle and Nia not friends anymore? Has Michelle always hated Danny? Like, where are these friendships, you know?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't even remember like where Nia fit in with the group in season one in terms of all those things. But I think it's clear that I'm sure that as Jesse has gravitated towards Danny and Nia, that has probably made Michelle feel a certain sort of way about those two as well. Like,
probably.
Wow, you're befriending my asshole ex-husband.
That's true.
Like, maybe
she's low-key refriending her asshole ex-husband too. She's all flirting with him all episode, complaining about affection. I'm like, girl, why? See, look, she got attachment issues just like I do. How come when you finally get divorced, that's when you start liking the motherfucker? What's going on here?
I know. I do love that, like, the strange twist of this whole thing is that Michelle Lally winds up dating Dr. Dre. Like, that's like the twist that I know that, like, Dr. Dre has not been very good. He's not been very good to the women in his life. So I don't approve of that. But I approve of the concept of Michelle Lally winding up with like a superstar.
what's so crazy about it is just like, okay, it's so already a reality TV realtor is dating a billionaire. A famous billionaire. And he's also a rap billionaire? Like, what the fuck? Like, what about Michelle says, I'm a date a rap legend? That is so crazy to me.
It doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
She doesn't even smile. Can you imagine her bopping her head to a Dr. Dre beat? Like, that's crazy.
Walking down the street.
With her staccato ass voice. She's crazy.
I know.
I love her. She's my favorite on the show.
About Michelle.
I don't know why. I just love her. I think she's just like, so I'm a very emotional person, and I'm also like not like, I have poise sometimes depending on the situation, but I'm not cool at all. I'm not cool, girl. I'm not cool. And there's just something like aloof about Michelle that I wish I could just like take that quality of hers. Like, she obviously gives a fuck, but she looks like she never gives a fuck. And then it's like, it feels more precious when you see some vulnerability with her. Like, she's strategically being open with Tom Schwartz. She's discussing her mom more. She's talking about her feelings about her divorce. And I'm like, this is great. You hypocrite ass bitch. You had your man all around Jesse, but you and your feelings, and let's keep going. Keep going. I like this.
Yeah. I just love how it's going to make Jesse. I just love the Dr. Dre of it all for how it's going to make Jesse feel. Like, oh, he's absolutely. Gonna, like, it just, I love how small it's going to make Jesse feel.
Especially since you can tell, like, the minute. See, I don't understand why Michelle gave him that much, but maybe she knows she's making good TV. When she was like, you know, you never gave me physical touch and you never showed me affection. It hurts my feelings to see you do that with Lacey. And Jesse's in the confessional like, well, she's just going to have to deal with it the way I, like, he felt so empowered. So I love that there's a TMZ press release where it's like, oh yeah, I'm dating a billionaire, you broke bitch.
So, so Michelle is, so it happens right here where Kristen's like, listen, I understand feeling anxious and needing to walk away, but why does she keep doubling down? Because now they're angry at Janet for walking away. I do wish Janet would not walk away. I hate actually when reality stars in general walk away, because that's like what the real life person would do. Like, in real life, you walk away from bullshit. But on reality TV, I want you to sit there, especially because I do feel almost like what you were saying. I do feel like Janet has the raw tools to actually shut everyone down, but she's like too afraid to use them. And I think she's too afraid of looking like a huge bitch. She's too afraid of like people not wanting to film with her. Maybe she just knows she's like, she's not good at it, certain things. And she will say something really bad that's going to haunt her, like the, like bringing up sexual assault on that boat. So she does just sort of walk away. Maybe her therapist told her to do that. Who knows? But now they're like, well, why does she just keep on doubling down? And Michelle's like, but what about everyone else? Everybody has a problem with Danny. Everybody does. And Nia's like, well, that's a big statement. It's not true.
And there's literally a whole villa of people talking shit about Danny right now.
Let me tell you something. I said it last year on the podcast. I said that production was protecting Danny. And then last year, the first year, the very first episode, I famously was like, Nia is evil. I don't know if Nia is evil, to be honest. I feel like I'm still waiting for her to be actually evil. I do think that she is covering for evil. And I always knew that because the very first episode, when she referred to Danny as Daniel, I was like, there's some bullshit going on here. Why everyone calls him Danny, but you call him Daniel? It's like you have to say that to him because you know, like, he gets crazy, right?
Yeah,
and you, so have, you have to almost like, have, like, this maternal, like...
Yeah, Daniel. When your mom uses your full name to get you to sit down, you know what I mean? Also, you know, like, this is, like, an extreme example, but, like, fascists have wives, too, you know what I mean? Like...
Ava Braun.
Right, like, you know, like, in some circles, Melania's beautiful. She don't say shit, but she's pretty. And I mean, that's what Nia is like for Danny, you know what I mean? But she actually is evil because she doesn't just she doesn't let Lala fight for her, right? She takes it up as her duty to protect her man against people who call out his abusive language. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's like, you're participating in your own abuse, and then you're helping him do too much with other people. So she is evil in that she abets him, but she's an accomplice after the fact is what she is. Yeah.
So then Nia's saying, like, there's nothing wrong with Daniel standing up for himself, but that makes everybody quote unquote uncomfortable. And this general word is uncomfortable. It's just like ridiculous. The fact that Nia and I almost said Daniel, the fact that Nia and Danny still don't understand what everyone means by uncomfortable. In fact, every time the cast keep on saying uncomfortable because they're being polite. To be like, he's fucking annoying. We think he's shitty to you. We think he's an alcoholic. He doesn't know how to drink like the rest of us. And he's handsy. That's like what they're really saying with the word uncomfortable. But Nia is only... I think all that Nia hears with uncomfortable is... is probably just like a sexual pervert. I think that's what she's hearing.
Yeah.
And it's actually much more than that.
Well, but it also is that, and that also should matter too, right? And so, like, the way that she's dismissive of uncomfortable makes me, you know, like when, it's very church of them where, like, you say that, like, the pastor is inappropriate with the the women in the congregation, you're just like, oh, come on. He's just like, she knows exactly what the accusation is. That's why Danny's still so mad. They know exactly what the accusation is. Mm-hmm. They don't like it. And so now they're trying to make you wrong for noticing that he's sexually inappropriate. But she knows what the accusation is, because when she brought up the comparison to Jesse at Lally, she specifically chose a moment where he was simulating oral sex on someone, right? Or mm-hmm. later in the episode when she tells him not to move his hips. That's not why people are uncomfortable. But as church-going, faith-based people, they are obsessed with the sex of it all. And they're thinking of it in terms of like lasciviousness, like perversion, like you said, when it's just about boundaries altogether.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is that like, I don't think everyone necessarily thinks, oh, Danny is going to come up and put his hands on me. Mm-hmm. But what the thing is that when no one really knows what he's going to do.
Right. You're
like, is Danny about to become really grumpy? Are we going to have to like mollify him? Are we going to have to sit there and watch him speak badly to Nia? And then like, what do we do in those situations? Are we supposed to intervene? Are we not supposed to intervene? Mm-hmm. And then you're like, again, you're just like not having fun. And it's like right now all your attention is like, how do I like interact with the situation? What will happen to me? What will I have to take care of him? Will we have to take right care of him? Am I gonna have to lie on behalf it's of like, him if I see something?
It's like every angle of like patriarchal misogyny. It's like he takes it on every part of it. It's the condescension towards women. It's the sorry, an ambulance, sounds of New York. I apologize.
It's okay.
But it's the condescension towards women. It's the like demanding your wife behave according to her religious wifely duties in public, but you can talk to her anyhow. You can disrespect the women in the friend group. And also maybe you might grope too, because that's also part of it. Like it's not just sexual, but it also is sexual. And then it's all the other parts of misogyny as well. He's just a misogynist. And it's like, I'm sure the other guys on the cast are too, but he doesn't even dare to hide it. It's just this performance of old school patriarchy, like encased in religiosity. And it's like, it's like a specific brand of like obnoxious male. And then you add alcohol on top of that, and it just explodes it from every angle. Like, that's crazy. I couldn't imagine being her. And I'm like, the show has yet to show me like a good quality about him. He's not a good father. That's another part of the patriarchal shit. He's not a good hands-on father. He's not funny. Like, what am I meant to?
What? He's definitely not fun. That's the biggest offense. He's not funny.
Not I was like, funny. End of the list right there. Terrible. I'm like, oh my God, these childish vasectomy jokes are terrible. You always talking about fucking when your wife's trying to have a serious conversation with you. It's like he's like the worst trope of like a 90s or an 80s like sitcom husband. Like, he's just so obnoxious. True.
It's so true. I think in his first season, he got like a really great edit. You know, he was just seen as this really nice guy. He doted on Nia, taking care of the kids. And I wonder if he just sort of assumed he would still keep getting that edit and was not expecting probably all. He got comfortable maybe with that edit. And so he probably just assumed all this behavior that's happening now maybe wasn't going to make it to the final show.
And here's another thing about like not knowing how to do the TV. And it was so bullshit when he said last week, well, this is my first rodeo trying to pretend he don't know what he's doing, but he also don't know what he's doing. I don't understand for the life of me why Danny and Nia have not figured out that they need to be maneuvering differently to protect their image. They insist on doubling down on protecting an image that we already know don't work. So why not like move around it? I'm starting to be like, what is the benefit of y'all being on the show unless you need the money? Because there's nothing that the last two seasons have done to improve his image with the public, even as he's trying to have a front-facing job or a voiceover job. I have never cared any. I don't care about her pageant life. They don't seem happily married. They aren't showcasing their faith well. They're not showcasing their parenting well. Like, what is the benefit for either of them on the show? I don't get it. And Nia seems to be trying to control the image, but I just don't understand why they are unable to pivot. They just seem to be doubling down on, you guys are terrible for not buying our bullshit, as opposed to like trying to finesse around it, you know?
Commercials. Here comes one right now.
So now we go over to the other group, and Zach and Benji are in the pool with others, and Lacey makes her arrival. So Zach comes out of the pool. I'm just always amused by Zach because when he's really happy, he starts like his body language turns into a toddler. Like he has his hands out like this, sort of like one is to like his left hand is sort of like pointing to like sort of like to 10 o'clock. The other one's to like 1 o'clock or something like that. And he just comes forward to her like, mommy. And so he loves Lacey. And so she has arrived. And what do you think about Lacey? Because Lacey surprised me. I thought she'd be like awful, but I don't dislike her as much as I thought I would. I kind of like that she shits on Jesse all the time.
Yeah. So I'm curious about that dynamic though, because, so if you think these things about him, why are you with him? See, I don't get it. That's what I don't get. You know what I mean? But Michelle was married to him for a long time too. So maybe he just be getting bad bitches who he charms. Well, maybe he's good in bed. Is that what it is?
I don't believe that. I feel like Lacey likes him, but she knows that the audience generally does not like
him. Yeah, she's very.
And so I think she's savvy and she's like, I'm going to shit on him too, because I know like audience will like that. And that's almost like the difference between her and Nia, what you were just talking about. Like, Lacey, if my theory is true, Lacey has like an awareness of like, this is how I would manage my appearance on reality TV. You know, like she has the savviness in a way that like Nia do not have.
But Jesse is more willing to concede points, maybe because he's the broke one in the relationship. He's willing to concede points that Danny is never willing to concede. Danny, if Nia said, no, my name is Nia, and he's like, your name's not Nia. And she's like, she'll have to say at some point, okay, fine, my name's not Nia. Because Danny does not bend at all. It's crazy.
Well, they'd have some sort of like therapized, like quasi therapy, quasi pastor talk where it's like, Daniel, I'd like to talk to you about how you are acting out right now. And I feel like when you said my name is not Nia, that was a feeling that made me not like it. And he'd be like, well, do we have to talk about this right now? But then now we go over to Luke and Brittany, and they are, and Lala too. They're releasing baby turtles into the ocean.
Which is so cute.
It is really cute. But also think about it. Imagine you're a baby turtle and like one of the very first things you have to see in life are like these three, like Lala, Brittany, and Luke. It's like, ah! Like this is the searing image you take with you as you go into the Pacific.
Brittany's voice as the first noise you hear is crazy.
The turtles just think it's her mom. The turtles are just going back to following Brittany.
Like, mama.
So they go out. They survive. And then we go back to now the other group, like the Janet group. And now they're shopping and they go into this like little clothing shop, and they've got like lots of cute things in there. And Jesse and Michelle are having this like really nice scene. They're like sort of shopping for Isabella, trying to pick things out, and they're actually like not at each other's necks. So then they get to the cash register, and Michelle is like, this is very nice. I like that we're not fighting. He's like, yeah. So she's like now I'm going to ruin it. Like, that's my favorite thing is I'm happy we're getting along, because these were the ways that we usually don't get along. And then now it's like, it turns into a fight again. So well, she's like,
The thing I noticed was when she asked him, I was like, oh my God, this man really is as broke as she's saying he is. Because when she's like, what are you going to get Isabella? He was like, oh, I thought I was going to get her something cheesy from the airport. I was like, oh, this man don't want to spend no money.
Nothing. And you know he's going to, now that Dr. Dre is in the picture, he is going to be totally abdicating any sort of funding for responsibilities. Like, Dr. Dre can buy it. That's what his mindset is.
He doesn't have it bad. His baby mom is dating a billionaire, and his current girlfriend is, like, wealthy off of divorce. I mean, he for a hobosexual, that's, like, the best case scenario.
It actually is really good. And he's also going to be, you know he's going to be so much nicer to Michelle now, so that way he can, like, get in with Dr. Dre.
Yeah,
and
then when he can up the cred, he wants to use his connections for his realty Rolodex. Absolutely.
Yeah, and he'll start talking about like Dre. He'll be like, Dre and I, yeah, we're cool. You know he will, because I know I would be. I like,
yeah, of course,
star fucker. So then Michelle's basically like, you know, it's not easy on me. It's a little awkward for me to see you so affectionate and kissing her right in front of me, because I have feelings and it feels weird. And he's like, you have to remember, I had to watch you and Aaron kiss in front of me. And I mean, he has, I feel like, some point, which is like, you know, like, you guys were making out in front of me too. That, you know, like, at some point you have to just like get over this.
Yeah.
But I do think it's a little bit of a different situation, because last year she was with Aaron, but Jesse was with Lacey. So they both had booze, even if Lacey wasn't physically there.
And Lacey was sending cease and desist too. You know?
That's right. Yeah. And I don't know. Like, I also feel like, as far as all the crying that Jesse did and all the ayahuasca journeys and like men's mental health groups he went in, I feel like Michelle, even though she was the one who left, I feel like Michelle is the one who feels like her dreams were shattered more. Like, she had to give up on her dream of this marriage and leave because she was so miserable. So I can sort of see.
She had to pay $15,000 to get this man to sign a paper. Like, this, like, and I didn't, you know, because she's so guarded a lot of the times, like, I did forget that her mom had died while she was going through the divorce and being on TV. Like, that's really hard. But you know, when people are guarded, you sort of don't give them the grace that they might need, you know.
I also think that, like, yeah, it may have been hard for him to watch her with the guy Aaron, but like, if she's putting in the requests, I think it's like, okay. Like, she's saying, look, it's hard for me. Like, it doesn't have to be like equal. She says, it's hard for me to watch you guys. Can you at least like respect that?
I think, especially since she has beef with the woman too. Like,
yeah,
you know, because for me, like, whatever, I've never been married or whatever, but like, if my man is beefing with his child's mother, don't show me the text messages where she's talking about me. You know, if you're not going to facilitate a sit down when we come together, do not show me that she's calling me ugly. You did that for what? You want me to be on your side and against her. That's why you did that. You didn't do that for any good reason. You know what I mean? So I think that Lacey's like seeing that Jesse is not helping the situation. So she's giving Michelle grace. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So now they go over to the beach, and Tom goes up to Janet. Is like, "Are you crying again?" She's like, "No, I'm good. I'm just enjoying the ocean." As if Janet's gonna just like be like, "Yes, I am crying, and let me like tell you all my issues, Tom Schwartz, evolved right. person who could like give me some insight." So they now it's sort of like a silly scene, because it's like they decide that they're gonna go skinny dipping, or whatever, and Kristen tells us, when our group of friends goes and travels, especially when there's like a beach and an ocean present, we would do like what any other fun adult would do and take our tops off. I forgot all about my postpartum body, because there's nothing better than shaking your tatas in fresh water.
I mean, I want to shake my titties in fresh water too, to be honest.
I don't want to, because my titties are way too big for my liking right now.
Kristen feels the same way too, you know.
her titties are luscious at the
moment.
They're
incredible.
And unfortunately mine are about the same size. So
oh, come on, man.
I've got little man boobies. It's so okay. Disappointing. But I'm like, I'm like skinny but with man boobies. It's like the worst combination, you know? I feel like if I were like 40. Husky. Yeah. 40. I mean, if I were husky with man boobies, then it's like, okay, it matches the general like sort of like shape and proportions. But when you're like skinny but with man boobs, it's like literally the worst combination. This shirt is never coming off again. Okay. I'll tell you that much. Nia, by the way, while this is all happening, because Michelle takes off her top and she's running around, she's frolicking, and Nia has gone and bought like some coconuts to drink out of. And she's like, wow, I thought I was being adventurous by getting coconuts. And like, part of me feels like she really believed that. She was like, guys, look at how wacky I am. I bought a coconut off of a vendor. Isn't this crazy? I'm fun, Nia.
Exactly. So I can imagine how sexy that Magic Mike shit. You think coconuts are exotic. Ain't she Mexican? Isn't she Mexican?
She said she's partially Mexican, I think.
And she's thrilled about a coconut, girl.
I mean, I get thrilled about very pedestrian things myself, but I feel like this is truly like a beacon for her right now, like a beacon from Santa Clarita. By the way, I'm going to Santa Clarita tomorrow, which is crazy.
It's a much cooler town than they make it seem. I've been there for vacation before, too.
Wait, I'm a little surprised. Wait, you went to Santa Clarita for vacation?
Yeah, it was not like a... It was just a weekend. When I lived in L.A., my college friend who's from L.A., she was just like, oh, let's just go to a bar. Let's go to a beach town or something like that. Was it Santa... Is it Santa Clarita or Santa Barbara? Maybe it was Santa Barbara.
I think you got it wrong. There's no beach in Santa Clarita. Santa Clarita is north and inland. It is like... bounded by mountains and so like
why are you going to the mountain range?
I'm going to a petting zoo. Don't ask. It's well don't ask.
Have fun.
Thank you. Naturally. I'm just going to Danny and Nia's house. So now we're back at the hotel. Everyone's getting ready. And the party tonight. This is for Zach's birthday party because it's going to be a trio birthday party. So tonight's birthday party is for Zach's, and it is the theme is slutty whore era. And Jesse says for him that was the late 90s and early 2000s. And Lacey's like, I was going to say early 70s. Pause for laughter. So then she's asking about like Janet and everything, and Jesse's saying like, well, she went and ran away as usual. She goes, did she play track and field? Because the girls got some sprint. Pause for laughter. So anyway, Janet sent a text that was something along the lines of, Kristen is throwing Jasmine, Zach, and Brittany under the bus with Danny to defend Danny. But this is how far she's like taking it. So then we cut over to the other suite where Brittany's like in the mirror. She's like, I'll put my makeup on. And now where they are all about to learn about this text message or whatever. So just Janet is like saying how she didn't have a good time with everyone. And Michelle's like, well, Jesse, Janet, Nia, and Kristen and Tom, we all went to lunch. And so we were all talking and it was very heated and they put all the blame onto Janet. And Janet's like, yeah, because like, if we're going to start talking about people's drinking, she was like, we should probably start with Brittany, Jasmine, and Zach. And now of course they're like, what are you saying? And Brittany just gets this look because she's like sitting on the floor doing her makeup. And like Brittany's facial expressions are so extreme. She's like an emoji. And so she has this like big smile on for no reason. And
then all of a sudden, those eyebrows do a lot of work.
They do. And then all of a sudden it just like totally goes upside down. And she's like, what? But like, Kristen, I might, she just like literally said I was her number one. And we see a clip, like a flashback of last week or 2 weeks ago when Kristen did actually say, you're my number one.
Yeah, she did.
But I am kind of enjoying, I'm actually enjoying Brittany a lot this season. And I'm enjoying her after her breakup from this guy. Because I feel like she just seems, something broke in her a little bit. And it's almost like her optimism broke a little bit. And she's just a little saltier in the past few episodes. And I'm kind of digging how she's been talking about Danny and Nia. Just because, not because I'm like, oh, let's have another person pile onto Danny and Nia. Mm-hmm. I'm just enjoying that it seems like it's coming from like a little bit of like an authentic place for her. Whereas Brittany can sometimes be so bubbly, you know?
Well, so also too, I think Brittany in a relationship, whether it's happy or not, is like really infantilizes herself or ages herself down a little bit. And like, without Jax and without, what's his name, Brandon, we see her have like grown up opinions and grown up feelings as opposed to like staying giddy when she's around Brandon or like helpless when she's with Jax. It's like, okay, now we see her as a woman. She's by herself and she's having adult feelings and she's articulating them adultly. Even like the way she's handling Jesse, I don't think she would be talking this way if Jax were still around, you know?
Mm-hmm, exactly. So meanwhile, in the other suite, Danny and Nia are sitting around and Nia, they're sharing stories from their respective days. And Nia's basically like, yeah, so Michelle said that you make everyone uncomfortable when you drink. And I was like, can you be specific? And they couldn't give me specifics. And Danny's like, I am laughing because everybody was like, nobody cares that you drink. Nobody cares. I'm like, yeah, but you're getting the wrong takeaway here. What they're trying to say is you act crazy, you act weird, you act annoying, you say demeaning things. And the thing is this, I was trying to like, in my mind, I was like, I was building a case of like, why is Danny, as they say, like on Passover, why is this night different from all other nights? It's like, why is Danny different from all the other drunkards on this show? It's because when they pop off, they are almost always reacting to something. Whereas with him, he's initiating belligerent behavior. Like, he is the one getting the ball rolling on negativity.
But also, like I hate this because Danny and me are playing dumb. They know exactly what the issue is. They're playing like they don't know what the issue is, or they're trying to shift it so that no one can have an argument with them about the issue. The issue is Danny is a problem drinker. Mm-hmm. Okay, maybe everybody else is a problem drinker, but the issue is that you are a problem drinker. Yes. We can talk about the other stuff later, but you are a problem drinker. We don't like your behavior today and every other day, but you yes. keep deflecting. You keep trying to have a different conversation, but you got to have the conversation. And it's also, it's almost like watching Love Island and you see the girls hear the part of the conversation that they want to hear when the boy said, I was going to explore, but you heard the part where you have nothing to worry about. You know what I mean? And so
I haven't even talked about Love Island. Oh, I don't even know. It's a lot.
It's crazy.
Right,
it's crazy. but it's like, so like Danny keeps hearing, you can explore, you can explore, you can drink. But
right.
No, like you're not supposed to go explore.
They're not saying to Danny, we want you to drink. They're saying, don't hide that you're drinking.
Right.
Like, you're going to do what you're going to do. We're not going to control you drinking, mm-hmm. but you have to know that when you drink, you're deeply unpleasant to be around and we all don't like it. And you're the only one who acts this way. So maybe you should consider your relationship with alcohol. Like, that should be his takeaway. But instead his takeaway is like, wow, I can't believe they all sat around and said, we don't care about your drinking. But then Michelle says that they actually all do care about my drinking. And his takeaway is actually that they're all very fake people. And like, the fact that that is your takeaway from this conversation.
It's crazy. And, yeah. and the same, and like, you've got to, like, he's not self-reflective because if, first of all, the fact that anyone is having conversations about how you drink is already a problem. That means you already a problematic drinker. But the fact that you are comfortable with lying on camera about the fact that you're drinking, like, why, if your drinking is okay, why are you lying about it? Why are you lying about it?
You can't like hold off for one night.
Yeah, that's exactly my point.
And like, I don't want to like shame someone. This sounds very PC. I don't want to shame someone if they are grappling with alcoholism, if they're grappling mm-hmm. with an unhealthy relationship with alcohol. I don't want to shame them for it because they're dealing with it. You know, they have to come to terms with it. They have to get there on their own time. What I don't like is how it's affecting other people and when it's being sort of gently to mid-gently being brought to the attention and increasingly less gently. Maybe it's not gentle anymore, but at one point it may have been. But if it's being brought to the attention and it's still being kind of like deflected, denied, and pushed back on the other people, that's where I get frustrated. It's like, now we have to sign on to your denial right now. And it's like, that's such an annoying place.
Exactly. Exactly. And my thing is, okay, I'm going to be vulnerable. I have a dicey relationship with alcohol too, which is why I recognize all this shit. And Danny, like he's doing shit I used to do. You know what I mean? If you got to go into a room and hide a White Claw, first of all, I think he chooses White Claw on camera because it's a lower, alcohol percentage point. Like, we know you a whiskey drinker at home. Like, ain't nothing about Danny, no White Claw person. You know what I mean? But also, like, if you can't go to work for 5 hours and not drink on camera, You've got an issue there, buddy. Like, do you know how insane it is to like, you're visiting Brittany because she just had surgery and you going into her gym to sneak a White Claw? I don't care what version of the story you tell. That is not a good look at all. And then even
wait, to be fair, she had people over and then he left the White Claw in the gym. And it was there for 2 weeks because no one went into the gym and it was discovered while she was
recovering. Oh, okay. Gotcha. fair. But it's still, why are you in my gym drinking? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And then there's that.
But then also too, like what I used to do a lot is because I know that my drinking used to bother some people. I would get drunk before I went to the event. So because if the anxiety of being around these people socially is what I need to drink for, I would just have some sips before I went to the event and just not drink there. So I was already tipsy enough. He can't even do that. He still needs to, like, on camera. It's just like, why you can't hold off for 5 hours? Like, this is a thing. And if you're lying about your alcohol consumption, it's already problematic drinking. That is just true. It is just true. And if this many people around you are telling you that the way you consume alcohol is a problem, it is a problem. Maybe you don't want to accept that. Like you said, he's making everyone participate in his denial. But I love, like, the cherry picking of what you heard. The fact that he heard everyone saying you can drink, but, and he doesn't acknowledge that thing after the but, or the fact that, like, everyone around him has to give him permission to drink doesn't set him off, doesn't, like, set off something in his head, is like, is enough for me to be like, all right, this dude is weird. He's a little off.
Yeah. I think also the drinking for him, like, it ties him to, like, 2006 Los Angeles, being a young actor, going out on the Sunset Strip, going to Cabo Cantina 2 for 1, 4 to 8 p.m. every single day. Not saying I live that lifestyle, but, like, I know the hours of happy hour. And, like, it was a fun time. You party, you go out with your bros, you go to, like, Geisha House afterwards. It was, like, a time. It, like, takes, and I feel like it's like, why do we have to grow up? Just because I've got kids doesn't mean we have to, like, make this part die. And
does he have, like, kids, or does Nia have kids? And he watches Nia have kids.
Something like that. Just because you live in a house where there are children. And I think it's like, I do think this is something that people grapple with, which is like, oh, like, I don't have to give this up. Like, who said, can't, you can have it all. And, like, I think he's not ready to sunset that part of his life. And someone wrote a comment last night on either Instagram or Threads or whatever, but they said, it was such a fun observation, maybe it's a message. I apologize. I'm not giving you credit because I didn't write down your name. They said, I feel like Danny was the guy in his friend group who was on TV, and, like, that was his thing. He was like the actor who's on TV, and he was, like, cool and fun and, like, the life of the party. But now it's like that's not translating in the same way, and they're all on TV, and so it's just hit, like, all the let's go. It was like, it was cool when he was, like, the famous guy who had, like, bit parts on the CW or Nickelodeon or wherever he was. But now that he's on this show, it's just sort of, like, cringy and, like, awkward and annoying, you know? So I thought that was such a great observation for whoever said that.
That's so true. And it makes me think of Kyle Cook, because Kyle Cook, as obnoxious as he must have been in his marriage, being that guy, it doesn't seem to bother the people around his friend group as much as it bothers Danny's friend group. It's just, there's just a way to finesse it. Unfortunately for Danny, he's not as likable as Kyle, so he doesn't get away with it the way that Kyle might.
Yeah, Kyle is someone who, like, everyone acknowledges has a drinking problem. But, like, he's almost, like, high functioning, and he, like, invites you into his fun in a weird way, unless you're Amanda, in which case he invites you into his rage. But
exactly.
But, like, it is sort of funny. People express their drinking in different ways, and Danny just expresses his in a shitty way. And let's also not forget that when they went to that amusement park in San Diego, they get there and he was so surly and so annoying because he wasn't able to drink yet.
Right.
And that was another big red flag, which is that he was angry that everyone was there earlier and had already gotten to start drinking, and that he wasn't able to start drinking yet.
Exactly.
He really wanted to start drinking. And
doesn't that feel like a dependence to you? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean you could say
it's a FOMO. You could say it's FOMO. It's like, oh my God, why are we like staying back with the baby? We've helped with the baby. Let's get to the party. Let's get to the fun times. I get that feeling too. I understand that, where you're like, oh, I just want, like, everyone's there already. Can we get there? But I think he was itching.
He was fiending. You know what I mean?
Fiending.
Yeah.
So anyway, back to party night. Everyone's getting ready for Ho Era. And for some reason, Tom Schwartz has, like, put like white stuff all over his face.
Does he think that Kiss is like the band? Is that what his whole era is? Is he just Gene Simmons?
Like, does he not understand how era? He has, like, this weird kind of goth look. Like, I don't know what is. He could have just gone out dressed the way he is, because he is still in his whole era. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, God forgive me, but I still find him to be as obnoxious and, like, you know, like, weaponized incompetence and all that. I do find him handsome, and I do think he'd be fun to be around on a casual basis. Like, he is hot. I don't know why he's. I mean, like, it's. I don't know. It's weird to watch Tom Schwartz, like, lean into, like, dad bod Tom Schwartz, because he's still a very objectively attractive man. Like, Michelle,
he's cute.
Yeah, he's very cute.
He's 100% cute. He's tall, what'd you say? By the way, he's 100% cute, and he's tall.
And he's tall. And I doesn't he seem like, oh, if you're at a party, he's a good time. You know what I mean? Not the best, 100%. Time, but a good time.
I met him at BravoCon. He's, like, really sweet. He's very lovely. He is a good time. But I think his shtick is just getting. It's like getting old. His shtick needs to, like, evolve to, like, it's not. It just doesn't play well at his age anymore. You know.
He also doesn't have a foil, right? He doesn't have Tom Sandoval here. You know,
yeah,
to like give him something to work off of. And so, like, when he makes certain jokes with this group, it's like, they're not feeling it, brother.
Like, yeah. It's like when you're hot, but then you start going down like that sad path at the same time, you're hot and sad at the same time. It's like, it's rough. I feel like his styling is like moving towards Smash Mouth, you know, like, like he's going to be wearing bowling shirts soon. Hey everyone, this is the end of part one of this recap. For part two, keep an eye on your podcast feed. It is coming up in just a moment. Thanks so much for listening. Catch you on the second half.
Watch What Crappens would like to thank its premium sponsors.
She answered the call. It's Adia Paul.
Ain't no thing like Allison King.
Our way is the Amber way.
It's the Foster and the Furious. It's Amanda Foster.
It's Always Automatic with Ashley Otto.
Put your hands together for Carly Clapp.
Get on the right foot with Chrissy Offutt.
She's not just a Sheila, she's a Daniela. Etchels.
We never miss her call. It's Diane Call.
Sunday in the Park with Dylan Clark.
Big yay, it's Emily Gauthier.
Aaron McNicholas, she don't miss no trickolas.
Hava Nagila Weber.
You'll never hide from Heidi Eleanor Jones.
It's no BS. We love Hugo E.S.
Jamie, she has no last namey.
Sipped some scotch with Jessica Trotch.
She's our favorite streamer, Caroline Peacock.
Kristen the Piston Anderson.
Que sera, sera, whatever will be, will Lauren Silsby.
She gets an A from us, it's Lindsay D.
Let's give a kisserino to Lisa Lino.
Fresh as a daisy, it's Maisie McHenry.
Come again? We're obsessed with Margaret O'Halloran.
Megan Berg, you can't have a burger without the Berg.
Gather round for the lore of Michelle Moore.
This is Living with Michelle Vivian.
I love a ya, Olivia Williamson.
She sure is swell. It's Raquel.
Yes, we canna. It's Savannah.
Cast a spell with Shannon Spellman.
Let's share with Sharon Eldridge.
Darn Skippy, it's Tippy.
And our super premium sponsors.
She's VVIP, it's Amanda V.
Somebody get us 10 cc's of Betsy MD.
We're taking the gold with Brenda Silva.
Let's get real with Caitlin O'Neill.
Put us on a stretcher, it's Charlotte Fletcher. Hogle your horses, it's Christine Hogle.
Don't get salty with Christine Pepper. Can't have a meal without the Emily Sides.
Who, what, why, where, and Gwen Pentland.
Nobody holds a candle to Jamie Kendall.
We got our wish, it's Jen Plish.
Have a kebab with Kay Rob.
My favorite Murdo, Karen McMurdo.
Let's get savage with Laura Wildman.
In the study with a candlestick, it's Leslie Peacock.
We're ride or die for Lisa Ryder Barron.
She's a whiz, it's Liz Sarthy.
Always killing it, it's Lola Alkalani.
Roger that, it's Marlis Rogers.
The incredible edible Matthews sisters.
She eases our woes, it's Melissa St. Rose.
She's the lady of the house, it's Rachel Sharouse.
There's a chance of meatballs, it's Rebecca Cloud.
She's our princess, it's Rebecca Prince.
She's the queen bee, it's Sarah Lemke.
We cannot tell a lie, it's Sarah Tell of Sun.
Shannon, out of a cannon, Anthony.
Please don't stop, it's Soli and Pop.
Let's take off with Tamla Plain.
Strike a pose, it's Tori Rose.
She ain't no shrinking Violet Couture. We love you guys.